Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of... It is. It's just such an... coming here is such an episode on Sundays. You'd think it starts at noon. I mean, when we used to be at 8 o'clock in the morning, that kind of explained why we were in a hurry. But, you know, we could do this at 5 o'clock at night and...
I think we'd still be in a hurry.
Things would be scattered about. So we're working on our... getting our guest on Skype and getting our computers opened up and all this other fun stuff. The chaos never ends. But, you know... just part of the fun. So you are joining We the People Radio, another episode. It in real life, it's December the 9th, and it's odd. It's almost Christmas. I don't know. It doesn't really feel very Christmassy, but it is almost Christmas. So if you're listening to this at a different time, pardon our Christmas chatter. And if you'd like to send us mail, got a letter from one of our listeners, and you can always send it to the studio here at KCNR. You can send it to our P.O. box, which is listed on our website at wethepeopleradio.us. You can send us email. You can call us on the phone. If you have ideas, comments, you notice there's something funky going on with the website. I don't know. Something going on. Like, if you want us to get here...
No, we don't care.
If you want us to get here earlier and be more prepared when we start, that's probably...
Yeah, it's probably not going to happen.
You might as well just save that.
You're certainly welcome to...
We will
mention it.
We will endeavor to do that, but you know, I don't know. The time gods work against us every time. So, anyway, those are all the contact points. We'd love to hear from you about show ideas, guests, really good books you've read. You'd like to hear from the author. I should tell you by way of announcement next week. What are we talking about? I just clicked off of it. Hold that thought. Oh yeah, Judicial Fortitude with a new guy named Peter Wallison. We haven't spoken with him before. So we're going to learn some new things about what's going on in the judiciary. I think everybody has a lot of questions there. And I'll try to post something up. I have the page up, actually, if you'd like to read about him ahead of time.
Are they going to fire Donald Trump? That's what I want to know.
Are they going to fire him? Yeah, who knows what kind of harebrained plan we got. It's next month we start talking about the harebrained plans when the House flips over.
Yeah, there you go.
That's when it's going to get kind of interesting. So, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Who's our sponsor, Bill?
This week, we've got Team Power Tractors up at Shasta Lake.
Yeah?
And they are our local John Deere and Kubota tractor dealer. And you can get them up there at 3119 Twinview Boulevard or give them a call at 226-9226. Anything tractors. You got a broken tractor you want fixed. You got one you want to trade in, get a new one. You need parts for your tractor. They do it all up there, and they're easy to work with. Just give them a call.
And mowers,
yeah. They do mowers as well.
Lots of mowers.
Yep. And you can also get them online or on the web at readingtractors.com. That's Team Power. And we thank them very much for sponsoring the show.
Absolutely. And all of our individual sponsors as well. Thanks tons for that, you guys.
Yeah.
We appreciate you. And,
actually, couldn't do it without them.
Well, then there's that.
Yeah. That's how much we appreciate it.
It's a fair point. All right. So, swiftly to our guests. Let's see. We are on to part 8 of The Real South Africa. And this episode, we're moving to the next episode. Our episode is over now.
Lots to talk
We've
about
smoothed
in
it out.
South Africa.
Situation critical. And so our guest, Dr. Harry Bouyans, is going to be with us again. People really don't hear a lot about this. And I know it's popped up a little bit on Fox, but not much else.
Yeah, I'm really surprised that the mainstream media hasn't jumped on this. I mean, all the human rights, all that kind of stuff is all right there for the picking, and
yeah,
they don't want to touch it.
That used to be journalism, but now we talk about, you know, who's wearing what outfit, and I don't know, who gets along with whatever at the White House. And
what kind of boots they're wearing, yeah.
Yeah, kind of stupid.
Very silly.
So, about our guest, if you have not heard from him before, Harry Bouyans is an internationally recognized, multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist.
Did he collude with Donald Trump, though?
Ha! Huh. And you know what? Yeah, I don't think he knows. I don't think he knows any Russians, but he does. I think we talked about that once. All of the previous shows are listed, and I really do hope you go back and listen because we can't obviously start at the beginning every single time. But the history is fascinating, and I'm going to wager 99% of it you've never heard, and you have no idea what's going on down there, unless we're unless we are somehow totally different than the rest of the world.
Well, they hear South Africa, they think Nelson Mandela and how
what a great guy he is,
what a great guy, and how much he reformed the country. And, not so much.
Yeah, and then there's all the rest of it. Dr. Bouillon's family comes from South Africa. They have a 360-year bloodline in that country. So this isn't a place they just went to for a little while, took up on some land, and, now they've just moved. But it has become fairly untenable to live there, depending on your skin color. And the white people are really under attack there. He has moved to the forested slopes outside of Vancouver, Canada, which sounds lovely. And his life as a scientist exposed him to many of the realities of the Cold War and the period immediately following the fall of the Berlin Wall. And it included interaction with the United States, the British defense establishment. He applies his lifetime of research and interpretive skills to history and genealogy and writes with factual accuracy. And I'll tell you what, he leaves no stone unturned. And engaging style on these subjects. Hard evidence is a trademark of his work, and he's won a number of awards. He focuses on making Americans aware of what's happening in South Africa, the historic parallels between the two countries, and the warning that South Africa holds for Western civilization in general. Can't stress that enough, and the United States in particular, especially with this weird fascination we have with, the magic of socialism. So we're all good to go, eh?
Well, good morning, Aaron. Well, I don't know if you guys can hear me.
We can, and you sound great, despite all of our, scurrying around. It turned out perfect. Well, you sound perfect.
It turns out, ma'am, that for about 3 minutes there, your voices appeared in a tablet of mine lying at the other end of a room.
Oh, no.
We sounded like little small
properly.
Mice in the corner.
That's more of it, sounded like, help, let us out, help.
No one ever says that about my voice. And, gosh, okay. I can hardly hear you.
And so we're hopefully everything's nice and back and correct now. You mentioned that the world doesn't know about it. I think fundamentally the problem is because when I look in the mirror, there's a white face looking back at me. That's the prime reason. And second reason is we are Protestant Christians mostly, so that's another reason nothing will be said about us. And, of course, no South Africans that I'm aware of have yet kind of tried to jump a fence at the southern end of the United States.
Oh, yeah, that's another way to get noticed.
Yeah, we're not dangling from any barbed wire there just yet, so no rent hearts will go out to us, Nor are we rushing through the outer edges of Europe in huge columns, so we're just sitting stuck at the southern tip of Africa. It's kind of difficult to rush Europe if you have to start at the southern tip of Africa, and the Mexican border is really far away.
Even with some help from George Soros, your caravan isn't probably going to make it.
I don't know what to tell you. I trust that your listeners will forgive my very acid-dripping, cynical, sarcastic sense of humor.
Well, they've forgiven us for, 8 years.
8 years.
I think they're into it, actually.
Yeah, there's been plenty of sarcasm.
Yeah, I guess other people call it whistling in the graveyard. I put an article out in the last 24 hours under the title South Africa Situation Critical. Essentially, things are coming to a head. But it's somehow difficult for me to just jump into that without just recalibrating folks a little bit as to that which they honestly believe they know about South Africa. And I've met a lot of people who honestly believe they know what's up with South Africa. For me, it happened the first time in 1979 when I lived in New York. And a very, very nice gentleman tried to help me with my car, which was a clapped-out old Pinto. And he told me, yeah, I know about South Africa. I was in the war in the Mediterranean.
Wow. Oops.
Well, there you go.
So that helped. And then just to show you that highly educated people clearly know about South Africa, while I was working at IBM, of all places, a master's degree physicist lady got hold of me. She knew I had an interest in stamps and stuff at the time. And so she brought me some stamps and she asked me whether I perhaps know her friend who lives in Liberia, which would be a little bit like asking somebody in New York if they know a friend in Colombia.
It's right there, the same continent. Gosh, don't why wouldn't you know them?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, you know, do you know, like, Juan Rodriguez of How come you know him, you know?
Yeah, that's like you in Vancouver, you know, Honduras, right around the corner.
Yeah,
hey, we have to, on this geographical free-for-all, we have to take a really quick break here at the beginning, sorry. And then we'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Harry Williams, and we're going to be talking about South Africa. So if you would like to follow along with any of the things that he has sent to us and the things that we'll post along the way, you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul, then it's just your body.
We're back. All right.
Hi, Aaron. I do not know whether you can see my little notes on the side that I've sent you. I think they've gone to whoever JK is.
They actually go to Ashley, so we've got phantom people involved. I think it's Jared, because I think we're using Jared's laptop.
I think so, too.
So Jared's a phantom, but Ashley can read them.
Harry, you were talking about basically how much people know about South Africa, and I'd like to mention your book.
That would make a much smaller book.
The book you wrote, Amabulu, I've got that book, and boy, if you want a history of South Africa, you want to know the real facts, you need to read that book, and maybe you could talk a little bit about that, too.
Okay, well, In a nutshell, the book is called Amabulu, which is a weird name. That Ama just means people, and Bulu is a Xhosa corruption. Xhosa is a language, isiXhosa. Corruption of the word Boere, which means farmers in Dutch. Mm. They couldn't pronounce it, so they called it Bulu. And Ama means the Bulu people, or the Boere people, the farmer people, meaning all white guys back in the early 1800s, because they were all farmers. So it is the isiXhosa language name for us white guys in South Africa. So that's the title of the book, basically. Yeah. White guy.
Yeah. great. It's a great history lesson if you want to learn about South Africa. I wanted to mention that.
And if folks want to find anything I'm talking about today, or even the book, or any of that stuff, or even just me, all they need to do is just put that word into Google. My stuff kind of pollutes the page from the top to the bottom. And it's spelled Amabulu, Amabulu. That's it. That's about as much as I'd like to say about this book that is causing me so much agony in my life.
Ben.
Yeah, I wrote it because, people didn't understand. People were attacking wrong people for wrong things. I literally had one person at IBM walk into my office one day and carry on at me because why the hell did I let Idi Amin do all that stuff?
Wow. Like,
yeah, they did.
Like you were responsible for it somehow?
Yes. Do you know how many people ask me whether Africa has countries?
Oh.
Yeah.
Seriously, I mean it. People asking me whether Africa has countries. And if you're the white guy, you must be the nasty pig in charge. Therefore, I'm responsible for Idi Amin. That's how the logic goes.
Literally guilt by association. Except you were never associated.
And never in the same country.
Wow.
Yes. You see the problem.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Right. I'd get into trouble in the U.S. for just suggesting that a Texan was from New Hampshire, you know. Did I just say that?
We like it.
Maybe I should have chosen Mississippi instead. Anyway.
Around here lately, you get in trouble for everything. So you might as well say what you think, because whatever it is, however careful you are, it's going to be wrong anyway.
Yeah.
So
say it while you still can. Dying.
My people are dying. I've been called everything in the book. You think I care?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So what I thought I should do is just in terms of correcting a couple of basics, I would like to do that and then move on to the subject we're supposed to discuss. Okay. And the very first one of those, I call these the drop-dead important historical facts. The first is that when the Dutch settled the Cape of Good Hope in 1652, that was the start of South Africa, the nearest black people were actually 700 miles away. 700 miles. Okay. Secondly, it took two generations until 1702. That's 50 years exactly before the first white man met the first black man overland in South Africa. Two generations. That's how long it took, guys.
Mm.
Okay. And it happened about 600 miles east of Cape Town. The next important thing is, and this is important for every American of any skin tone to understand, no indigenous black South African person was ever enslaved by any white man from anywhere. I will repeat that. No indigenous black South African person was ever enslaved by any white man from anywhere. Not the Portuguese, not the Brits, no one. So Oprah cannot be of Zulu descent. Okay, as once was suggested.
And she can be, hopefully she can she'll never be president either.
She can be Mozambican because the Portuguese did take slaves in Mozambique, which is next door. Okay, but very far away from where people were in the slavery days. Next, it is true, however, that Nelson Mandela's own Amakosa people did enslave other black people. That is true. They were called the Amafengu, and it's a long story, and I'm not going to bore you with it. Now, and here's the kicker. It's the white South Africans like me, not the black South Africans, whose ancestors were slaves of the Dutch. Let me be specific. I had my DNA tested a while ago, about a year ago. Got a couple of interesting things back. And in the last week, a lady named Susanna Bispo from Brazil got hold of me to tell me that it seems that she and I are related distantly somehow. And the only way that that is possible is if we share a Nigerian ancestor.
Hmm. So how would that be possible?
Because most Brazil is probably the biggest destination of slaves in the history of mankind. And because the Dutch, in around 1657, 5 years after they started at the Cape, they defeated the Portuguese at sea, took some ships off them, and one of them was a slave ship, and they took some of those guys to the Cape.
Mm.
Okay. And there you go. Bob's your uncle, there's the answer. Okay.
As long as it's easy.
Yep. And that's it. So at the moment, she and I are exchanging notes trying to trace that back exactly and correctly. I will tell you one thing. When you get these answers back from these DNA companies, one of them has this habit of playing you a video of all the possible origins that's involved in your bloodstream. Man, everything kind of sounds really old and fancy old style music until they get to Nigeria and all you get is a drum beat. And man, it's cool. Okay. So I like that little fractional Nigerian bit of mine because that drumming is really superb. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Since 1814, when the Brits defeated Napoleon and made a deal with the Dutch, the Cape got given to the British formally in that year. Before that, they stole it. But this time it was given to them formally. And the white Afrikaner, like me, had no right of return to anywhere outside South Africa since 1814. Let me say that one more time. People keep emailing me and telling me, if it's so rough down there, why don't people just go back? And, you know, I don't know how to say to them anymore, there's no place to go back to. There's no right of return to anywhere. They're stuck.
Sure. It's been too long.
Yeah, okay. It's no different than saying something like that to a black person in the United States. Go back to they were never in Africa. They're
in some cases.
Distant relatives were, but they would be as out of place there as anywhere. They can't go back there.
Well, 360 years.
Yeah.
Well, talking 1814, it would be a little bit like telling Davy Crockett go back to Northamptonshire in England.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's about as much as I'd like to say about that, maybe except for the throwaway comment at the bottom of my little list, which is, it's not the Germans who invented concentration camps. The Brits used them on us between 1899 and 1902, and I lost 57% of my Boyan's family in there.
Wow.
Okay. Or let me correct that to be precisely correct. Of those Boyances who were put in those camps, and it was a huge fraction, 57% died, mostly the women and children.
Wow.
So, that was a couple of little factual things there. Hopefully I've scrambled the preconceptions that some folks have about things. The other thing they associate with South Africa is the magic word apartheid, which is blamed for absolutely anything that you can think of in South Africa, from the fact that some cakes won't rise properly, through to quality of education, and through to, as one friend of mine has suggested, the flatulence of flies in Timbuktu.
Yeah. Before we get involved, because I really want to talk about
involved
that.
Involved in the flies?
No, the apartheid, because I think that's what people relate South Africa to.
That's true. We shouldn't be flip about it, because people really do need to be unwound about that part.
Exactly. And we've got to take a break. So when we come back, let's talk about that a little bit and really get the misconceptions out of the way on that, because that's all people really hear when they hear South Africa is, oh, apartheid, you know, the nasty white people.
Sure.
So we'll be right back.
Yeah, that's why we have to kill all the farmers. Obviously that's not true on many, many levels. So we will be right back. Our guest is Dr. Harry Booyans. We are talking about South Africa. And you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I can't do everything, well, I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I find with everyone.
Yeah, and on that note,
there we are.
So let's turn the turn the whole apartheid thing upside down.
Yeah, because when people in this country hear South Africa, I really feel the first thing they relate that to is apartheid and Nelson Mandela and how he was able to get rid of apartheid and the whites and the black were
the white oppression.
They were able to work together now and have both blacks and whites in the administration, and they all lived happily ever after. And not the case.
And, not the case at all.
And that's unfortunately that's the history that I think most Americans know of South Africa.
Yeah, I have a friend. He's a good Democrat, and he tells me the one big problem with the United States is that ever since the company Staples came about, everybody is looking for an easy button for everything.
Mm-hmm. And ain't that the truth?
Well, I think the reason a lot of the media doesn't want to touch this is they don't want to be on the wrong side of that narrative.
Yes.
And that's where the problem is.
That is the problem, and the point is that nobody makes any homework of it.
Right.
So let's see if we can tackle some of that. First of all, a collection of laws or acts of parliament came about in 1948. Collectively, they were called apartheid, which means nothing more deep than apartness. At the time, the situation that government saw was that here they were, a country like Australia and Canada, part of that same family, only difference being that there is this incredibly rapidly growing black population that doesn't relate to that Western culture at all, and how they're going to handle that. So they came up with the galactically stupid plan of a collection of laws that said, okay, well, what they're going to try and do is set up separate places to live, separate schools, and stuff like that. And let me correct the first fallacy. No, there was never a law that says who walks where. There's no such thing as white people walked on one side of the road and black people on the other. I've heard that rubbish all over Canada, and I've even heard it from friends from South America. And they tell me they're getting taught that at school as being gospel. Mm-hmm. That's rubbish. It's just rubbish. It's rubbish. Okay? I'd better not repeat what one young lady told me in Philadelphia once. Now, those laws were in effect they started them in 48, added more in the early 50s, and then in the very early 80s, a much reviled guy called P.W. Botha, who was then prime minister and afterwards, due to a constitutional change, became president. P.W. Botha is the nasty guy who started taking many of these laws away. One of the most hurtful ones was the so-called Immorality Act, and everybody thought it's not the people that are immoral, it's the act that's immoral, and that it forbade relationships across the color line. And what do I mean by a color line? Well, if you're going to make laws that differentiate between people on the basis of skin color, you have got to have a way of telling them apart. So the law was made to basically separate people on the basis of skin color. How bad was that in daily life? Well, I hate to tell you guys this, but I've heard worse racial slurs and statements in my life in the United States than I ever heard in South Africa. Now, maybe it's because people could hide behind a law. I don't know. That's my theory, is they could hide behind the law. Therefore, they weren't driven to make nasty comments. But nevertheless, P.W. Botha is the guy who started removing those. And he started removing things like the Immorality Act. He started making it possible for black folks to have trade unions and the various things like that. At one point, the one law said that black people could only exercise their democracy in their own homelands and not in the general South Africa. And for that, they could only have property ownership in those homelands. And what happened is P.W. Botha started changing that kind of stuff. By the time it got to Nelson Mandela's release in 1990, the only laws that really remained of any significance were the ones that said who could vote for parliament. In other words, it had been reduced to a purely political situation.
And it was still, at that point, primarily white control.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, it was.
So the whites are the ones that reformed it.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm one of the guys who voted to change that, mm-hmm. you know? So shoot me. Apparently I should be killed because
for allowing the colored population to have a voice.
Yes.
Okay.
Apparently, for that, I deserve to die.
But they were the black population, or was it the black population and the colored population?
Well,
because colored there isn't black, right?
Yeah, I should explain that they created four racial groupings, and the present government in South Africa, Nelson Mandela's guys, still use those four racial groupings with malice. Now, the one group is white, Caucasian people. Yeah, okay. Everybody in America understands what that is. There are black people, and all Americans think they understand what that is. Okay. In South Africa, it means people of Bantu extraction, Southern African indigenous black people. Okay. There are very few Americans of that extraction, actually. Possibly Oprah, if she has Mozambican descent. Now,
all roads lead to Oprah.
And Kevin Bacon.
She's like the Kevin Bacon of the show.
She's a nice lady. It's just that, you know, people get misled on things.
Yes.
Then there's an Indian grouping, which became a very big deal because the British actively imported Indians to work in sugarcane fields in their Natal colony. That is how Gandhi got there, okay, as part of that effort.
And for the folks that are not that educated, you're talking about Indians from India.
India, yeah. I can't say East Indian either, because if you say East Indian, the actual Indians from the country called India get cross, because they say the folks in East India are not as sophisticated as the ones in West India. I wouldn't know. I'm just saying what they say. And then they get cross if I call them East Indians.
So we'll just call them Indians.
So I call them Indians. Okay. Then there are the so-called colored people who are descendants of white people, imported Indonesian and Indian slaves from the 1600s and very early 1700s, and of the indigenous Khoi people who were the original inhabitants of the Cape Town area when the Dutch arrived there. They weren't black people, they were Khoi people. So that general mixture makes up the colored people.
And the Khoi, yes. The Khoi people, you say they were indigenous. They didn't land there on a boat at some point?
No.
Okay.
No, they were there before the black people. South Africa was Sanbushman and Khoi country.
Okay.
For those people who don't know who the Sanbushmen are, most folks I've ever met have seen at some point in their lives a funny movie called The Gods Must Be Crazy with a little Bushman guy from the Kalahari Desert who ends up on a mission to throw a Coke bottle over a cliff to give it back to the gods because the Coke bottle caused so much trouble.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. And now those are the Sanbushmen people. And according to the DNA specialists, they have the earliest human DNA.
Oh.
So all three of us talking at the moment apparently are somehow descended from the San, or from a key ancestor of the San. But they have one of the earliest haplogroups, if not the earliest. According to Spencer Wells, who wrote the book on the subject, he spent much of his younger life going across the entire globe until he settled on them as the origin. Just so you know. So all that mixture formed the colored people. The colored people, their home language in about 80% of the cases is Afrikaans, just like my mother. So those four groupings were created. If they weren't socially already demarcated that like that, then the law made them like that, all of which I think was desperately stupid. But by 1990, anything that was in the general nature of hurtful discrimination was gone. What remained was who could vote to get power. So the period from 1990, when Mandela was released, until he was made president, was all about who's got the political power of control in the country. Do not let anybody else tell you anything. Okay? That's what was going on there.
Now, prior to that, just so I'm clear on this,
yeah,
black people could not vote?
Not in the central government, no.
Okay. All right, we've got to take a break, and let's pick that
this
up.
It's going
right
very
up.
Fast.
Yeah, let's
darn
pick
it.
That up at that point, because this is kind of a crucial demarcation point.
Yeah.
And
yes, from what we're commonly, I don't even know if we're taught what we commonly assume based on
yeah,
what
we learned it from the nightly news. With
what
Ted
little
Koppel.
we've yeah. heard. Good old Ted and his little rug. All righty, we'll be right back. You are listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
So we were at the point in the
yeah.
South African.
Nelson Mandela has been released, and what now?
Right.
Yeah.
So that was 1990. Very early in 1990, he was released from his incredibly terrible jail, which was a regular house on the premises of the jail, where he was put up, complete with a supply of wine by the Minister of Culture, I believe it was, had a swimming pool and a white cook. You won't hear that bit if you go there.
The only I didn't know that.
Well, it's in his own book. You can just read his own book. It's called Long Walk to Freedom. He's quite honest. He tells you about the nice place he was given.
Oh.
You know, so you don't have to believe me. You can just believe Nelson Mandela himself. I'm kind of nasty that way in that I tend to go and get the real evidence.
Oh, come on, put some emotion in it. You know, the facts are nice, but we need to talk about emotion here.
So things got really very ugly over that 1990 to 94 period, and some of the nastiest things in South African history happened over that period, and one group of black terrorists ran into a big church with 1,000 of the congregation attending and started shooting up the congregation and throwing nail-spiked hand grenades amongst the parishioners, things like that. But that wouldn't have made your television.
No.
So you don't get told that stuff. You don't get told that the guy who sent them is now in parliament. You don't get told that the guy who planted the bomb that blew up my mother's apartment building, that the street in front of that apartment building has now been named after him. This is what that government now does. Now, so it's 25 years after Mandela came to power. That will be next year in April. It'll be exactly 25 years. The government that he put together has been in power all that time. They've managed South Africa from being the world's number one gold producer to being number eight.
That's hard to do.
Yep. They have managed to, yeah, I don't even know how one expresses that. They have managed to turn one of the most stable economies on Earth, one of the important ones on Earth, they've managed to turn it into a country whose stock is seen as, what do they call it, junk bonds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's been derated to junk status. Great going. And the new president, who's now taken over, feels he's done a great job because he's just managed to lift a loan of about $35 billion from Red China. Now, we can't see each other over this connection today, but I would like you to look me in the eye and tell me that there's not going to be a hook in the tail of that.
You know, are you sure this is correct, Harry? Because I watched a movie here, it's been several years ago, based on a true story about the South African history, and they left it, it was about... The main characters in the movie were policemen. They were white policemen. And as a result of Mandela being released and the change, they brought in more and more black police. And it slowly converted over to where the blacks and the whites actually got along and worked together side by side. And at the end of the movie, it was a brand new country that was, you know, all rainbows and puppies.
It's magical.
Yeah. And that's where Hollywood left it, because that doesn't sound like what you're telling me.
Yeah, here's the thing about a rainbow, being a physicist and all, you know. have you ever tried to find that pot at the end of it?
Yeah, sometimes it looks like you're driving right toward it, and then you never
have
are. Have
you ever actually got to the rainbow? Does it ever occur to people that the whole thing is something that your eyes make up out of refracted light? And it really doesn't matter how far you go, you never get to the rainbow. I mean, as long as the rain keeps going.
Yep.
You know, and I guess you can only see a rainbow when there's rain. In other words, when you're coming out of the garbage, right?
Right.
So sorry for all the picture speak, but a rainbow is exactly the right, parable or parallel here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because there ain't no such thing. Or the way I put it in my own book, the rainbow hath no color white.
Well, I guess my point in bringing that up is that's where the misconceptions come in. Is people watch this garbage on television and they believe that's all they really need to know is what they've seen, and gosh, it's great.
They don't believe that it's Mandela who gave his guys the order to fire on the Zulus in the street in Johannesburg, killing about 35 of them. They machine gunned them out of the top of their party building. But and he defended it in Parliament a couple of days later. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's get clear on this. They also don't seem to understand that he is the guy who formed the military wing of that party. They also don't seem to understand that he had asked that organization to get military arms from China roughly a year before I was born. So he was already doing that back in 52.
Mm-hmm.
I was born December 1953. Well, maybe that's my cue to myself right there, quite by accident. On 16 December next week, I'll be 65. That birthday of mine, 16 December, is historically a very, very important day, because that is the day of a big battle that happened back in 1838. And the ANC government, well, let me put it this way. There was a covenant made with God that if these guys were to be victorious over the Zulu king, then a church would be erected in his name and the day would be treated as a Sunday forevermore, which it was. The church was built and that's always been treated as a Sunday. So the reason why I'm on about it is that as a kid, my birthday was always a Sunday and the movie houses were closed. That's tough.
Mm.
You know, so let me not confuse you. It's not as though I was a heroic character or anything. It's just, or much given to matters, biblical, etc. It's just that I wanted to go to the movie and I never could on my birthday. So what this lot did, what this new government did, is one of its first actions was to obliterate that day off the calendar. Okay? It's stuff like that has been happening over and over. Name the street after the guy who placed the bomb that killed the white women and children. Wipe out the commemorative Sunday that they have kept for 150 years. The list just goes on and on. And we've now got to the point where late last year, that government said they are now ready for the second phase of their revolution.
Uh-oh.
And soon after, they tabled their ideas that they would now want to take away the property of white people without any compensation. Now, that's a lot of words to say government theft. Because that's what it is. If you take people's property and you don't pay for it, it's called theft as far as I know. And this week, there was a committee formed to supposedly investigate it. The committee was led by the most visible communist in the country, a guy called Jeremy Cronin. Of course, he's a poet. What else? very factual people, these poets, you know.
Very visionary.
Visionary, et cetera, et cetera. It's left to idiot scientists like me to struggle with things like facts.
You poor astrophysicists.
Yeah, you know. So, he chaired this thing. There was a couple of, consulting sessions that just degenerated into complete farces with parties romping around, yelling slogans, and people couldn't talk and so forth. So everybody knew that would happen. The end result is they now came back and said, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, this is all cool. We want to go ahead. They tabled the thing, and the parliament voted this lot in. So I don't know, Aaron, Bill, whether you've managed to get those little YouTube thingies lined up to play.
We do. We'll have them all ready for the next hour.
Okay. And so my comment is, if it were possible at this point to play the first one, you'll actually hear how it happened.
Except we're in our last 45 seconds. So
yeah,
let's come back right after the news.
Yeah.
And start with the clips. And
yeah,
so if people want to be a little bit ahead of the game, I will post all that during the news break, and you can find it all at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Harry Bouyans.